tosses up. Van Hula Hokey Dope move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the west side. No good. But she's going to get a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
No,
she got it. Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
If you listen closely, you can hear the winds of change blowing through Bloomington Normal. There, thank you very much for that, Joey. Good evening and welcome back to the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND. I'm Leo Stoddard, your sports director here at WZND. Once again, we're back in triple threat formation here with joined by WZND's production director and the voice of the Quad City Storm, Mr. Joey Dwyer.
I'm also taking over all sound effects for tonight's show.
That he is, that's for sure.
Our soundboard, Joey Dwyer.
And the voice you just heard was our producer, Mr. Joe Kennedy, who will not be the soundboard, although he has some good sound effects too, but he's everybody's favorite TV 10 sports anchor. And we have some big news today, Joe.
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to The Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND.
And there you heard it there, Dan Muller. We're getting our last uses out of that sound effect there, so we have to play it. It's been kind of a whirlwind week for Dan Muller, and we'll really dive into this because it was kind of a strange turn of events. So the press release coming out on Sunday, just an hour before the NFL championship, a nice news dump by the ISU athletic department.
Yeah, maybe no one will notice this away.
saying that Muller won't return to finish out the season, but we'll not return after the season, but we'll finish it out. So without a month left, that seemed a little odd, but I mean, things like that happen in college sports. And then on Monday night, less than a little over 24 hours since that press release was put out, they put out another one saying that Muller chose to step down. I guess he did consult with the team. They wanted him to finish out the year. Now we're looking at a new coach, but it's someone from the staff. But it was just kind of a weird way how those two things followed each other in suit back to back.
Especially like making the players kind of decide. I feel like any group of players, no matter if they like their coach or not, they're not going to say, no, we don't want to keep him here. Because then it just makes the players, maybe they would feel like they feel or sound in a different way. And
I feel
just
like
an awkward situation.
That's putting a lot of pressure on the players, too. Like, this is a group of 18 to 22-year-olds that a lot of them have played for other coaches in college. But in terms of coaches they know at Illinois State, like, I feel like if you choose to let Dan walk there, you're almost punting on this season, giving up on what you've been building towards. It's almost them. It's a give and take thing, saying we failed Dan. Dan failed us. But I think it was kind of cool to see that the players wanted to finish what they started with Coach Muller.
And I think that if we just look back at Dan Muller's career with ISU, what is it marred by? You know, because if you look at all of the different teams that he's put on the court, all of these teams have been labeled as like unfulfilled. You know, it's like all of these promises unfulfilled, especially early in his tenure when he had some of those great teams that would make those runs at Arch Madness, but then ultimately
just
flame out.
Runs, yeah.
Exactly. They would flame out. They lose in the championship game. And then even after that, we put all these young pieces together, but they never really were able to put it all together, right? So it's just a lot of disappointment surrounding Dan Muller's tenure at ISU.
Yeah, Joey, like you were saying, three MVC championships. 2015, Northern Iowa, they beat ISU 69-60. Wichita State 2017 won by 20 points. And then 2018, ISU lost by 16 points. So they got to those places, but every time they really needed a big game, besides in, I believe, 2015, when Wichita State was a number 7 team in the nation, they came to ISU, and ISU won that game. But besides that, like, the big games, you never really saw ISU win. Even in the NIT, I don't think they got past the second round or the quarterfinals, and that was times where they were ranked as a number 1 seed in the NIT. So it's like they get to these big moments, or they had to, especially at the beginning, and they just weren't able to win in the big stage.
I think what makes the Muller era so polarizing is that if you're looking at what goes into it, Dan kind of was the perfect person for this job. A legendary player, an ISU alum, mm-hmm. coming back to maybe take this program back to heights, to the heights that they were at when he was a player here, because he was on the last team that made it to the tournament. And it did seem like that first chunk of his tenure, it was on that height,
yeah.
that ISU basketball was respectable, but then it just dipped off at the last 3 years. And I think that's what makes this such a tough thing, is when do you make that decision to cut ties with a program yeah. legend, a local guy, like someone that is the perfect person for the job. It is just tough to make that decision now, and Kyle Brennan finally did it.
And I think it's rightfully deserved. This is the third consecutive losing season for ISU for the first time since 1950. So to think about just – there's been years, obviously, before Dan Mullen where the Redbirds were struggling, had really bad years, but three consecutive losing seasons hasn't happened in a while. And another big factor I think that ISU's been struggling from is just the quality assistant coaches they've had, like before the past – 3 years before that, they had Jeremy Ballard, Brian Collins, Dana Foran out in Missouri State, Luke Yaklish, all guys who were under Dan Muller's like coaching tree almost, yeah. and guys who left there, it kind of just opened up like not so much success for Illinois State, because you don't take into account how important assistant coaches are, especially in a non like Power Six program or non Power Six conference like in the Missouri Valley.
And I think this is also a huge splash in terms of Kyle Brennan's yeah. early career here at ISU, because we've seen so much shakeup in the past year since he's been here, right? It started with Larry Lyons leaving, and then Coach Leah Johnson left, and now yeah. Dan Mullen gets fired. So there's a lot of turnover and a lot of opportunity for Kyle Brennan to put the first pieces that he wants in play. And so I think that's going to be a really big test for him is – can he find the right guy to take over this basketball program and turn it around?
And the volleyball, I feel like that might even be like a little overlooked now, because everyone, yeah. the majority of people across the whole entire country is like huge on college men's basketball and everything. So I feel like maybe there'll be a big focus on that, but hopefully that's not the case and everything. I just think Kyle Brennan's going to have a lot to do with this offseason, but I think it's a good idea to fire Mullen right now, just because the signing period for coaches starts in April, kind of gets finalized end of April, early May, and starting off now, you can kind of get a sense of a couple of guys you want to see.
Yeah,
you guys would have just said the same exact.
It's like what we were talking about last week with Leah Johnson, where uh-huh. the Redbirds are now a little behind the coaching search, where most of the volleyball coaching changes have already happened. With men's basketball, now you're ahead of that, so you can kind of vet your assistant coaches that you want. You can figure out what pieces you want to put in place, and I think we are going to find out what Kyle Brennan's made of now, as he gets to make two of the top coaching changes that an athletic director could make. Two of his highest earning programs are going to be looking for new heads now.
And I'll be honest, guys, like, it is kind of sad to see Dan go, because I say it all the time.
Yeah.
I say it all the time.
But everyone agrees.
Dan Mullen is a great guy. He's yeah. a great guy. He's been on the show. He's an awesome interview. He's always been nothing but nice to student media. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate him for that. But it's definitely bittersweet, because yeah. obviously the basketball program needs to go in another direction because of the lack of success. Like Joe said, since 1950, we haven't had three consecutive losing seasons.
Yeah.
So that's a great stretch, but we need to get this program back to prominence, and I just don't think Dan was the guy to do it.
And I think you echoed that pretty well, Joey, and seeing now a lot of the social media reaction to his firing is that kind of is the feeling Redbird Nation has, is everybody seems to like Dan Mullen as a person, and just wins and losses do ultimately make up whether coaches stay. And but I think that's good to see, because Joey, as we're obviously huge White Sox fans, it mm-hmm. makes me think of the Robin Ventura coaching blunder, that now that's a franchise icon that was the manager, and it didn't go well, and now a lot of the fan base resents Robin, even as the player. So I think the ISU fan base, though, can still respect Dan Mullen as a person, Dan Mullen as a player, and just decided it was time for it to end now, but there's yeah. not really many hard feelings left towards him.
I think the difference between those two is Dan Mullen never got fed by Nolan Ryan on the mound.
And I hope Mullen, though, can at least come here in the next couple of years, maybe. I mean, he'll probably get another job, assistant somewhere. He had that before at Vanderbilt and everything, but I hope he's going to be able to come back into ISU and the crowd can still give him an ovation, especially because what he did as a player.
I think what's next for Dan Mullen is color commentary, because yeah. I don't know if you guys listened to his
coach's show.
Oh, he's a natural. He could take our job.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean it doesn't pay very well, but Dan, you're more than welcome to come on the show anytime.
No, and I think that could probably be a great fit for him. You know, you think about it. Local ISU legend, comes back to be the broadcaster for the team. You get to do the Steve Stone thing where you don't have to make the decisions, but you get to react to the decisions. Mm-hmm. I think that just could be a great fit for him.
And with ISU broadcasting legend Dick Lutke just retiring, like there's some openings there if Mueller wants it. But looking on to the rest of the season, it's like Brian Jones is his replacement, an assistant. And like you said, Leo, it's – we were talking about it before the show. Like, the only thing that is certain about this team is unpredictability. Yeah. So we truly have no idea where this is going.
I think Brian Jones, I don't know if you could say this, but I think he's like the perfect fit for someone to step into a situation like this. I mean, he's been in weird situations. Before at North Dakota, he kind of led them to a NCAA tournament bid, but also led them from the Division II level to Division I. So a lot of uncertainty there. And now stepping in under Mueller, they've been together. He knows the players, too. Like, that's a big thing, especially for the rest of the season, that they're familiar with something and probably won't change up much of their style of play.
I think that's huge. You hit it right there, Joe, that you bring in someone who's been with the program since 2019. So even for the most veteran players on this roster, he's been there since they came in. So you have a little bit of a steady presence. And even I remember reading some of the articles when they did hire Jones around then, that everybody was saying that that was a good hire, to bring in somebody maybe a little older than Mueller by a few years, just another veteran coach on the staff that could help. And then as we see in a situation like this, this could really help too, where he is that another steady presence. He's experienced big time basketball before, that he could be a good person to help finish out this season with.
Yeah, definitely. But looking ahead, I don't know if you guys, did you guys look at any possible coaching candidates? Because I went pretty deep dive into
Joe,
it.
Joe, you're the biggest. You're the biggest college basketball guy.
I could
on
give
the show,
you a couple
so.
People.
Yeah, do it, because you know I don't watch enough college basketball. Yeah. I don't even know who most of the head coaches are, much less who their assistants are. That's your weird little area. So just go ahead, do your bit.
So a lot of this coachesdatabase.com. So first person that a lot of people have been circling around on Twitter is Roger Powell Jr., who's the Gonzaga assistant coach right now. He's an Illinois native, played for the Fighting Illini during their Final Four team and everything. He's been coaching since 2011, and he was at Valparaiso too. So, and then after that, he was at Vanderbilt, and then Gonzaga under Mark Few, who Mark Few's had a pretty good coaching tree this year. Tommy Lloyd went down to Arizona after 20 years as assistant there, and Leon Rice over at Boise State was under Mark Few. And it's just really only a matter of time for Roger Powell to get a head coaching gig. I've seen a lot of people talk about his style of development for Gonzaga players and recruiting too as well. And being from around the area, that could be a big thing to be involved with recruiting. Because as we were kind of saying the past couple of months, that Mueller maybe hasn't done as good as we want in the recruiting area, especially coming out of Chicago. So that's one of the first candidates that's been brought up a lot.
And also, he just brings with him, you're talking about recruiting, the status of the name Gonzaga. And you look at how much of a powerhouse Gonzaga basketball has been for the past 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so that will just attract people by itself, plus the Illinois ties. That he is probably the favorite name that I've seen just circling around like Redbird Twitter so far.
And there's been a lot of people talking about how they maybe don't want a guy that's been as an assistant coach throughout their whole career, and they want head coaching experience. One of those guys is Steve Prohm, who's a former Iowa State coach and Murray State coach as well. He had a lot of success over at Murray State before going to Iowa State, where he took the Cyclones to a couple of tournament bids. But then, I don't know if you remember, 2 years ago, Iowa State went 2-22. And I think it kind of the Big 12 Power 5 kind of got up to him. And I think Murray State in that area, he was a solid group of five coach and everything. And I think he could do a good job. And then one more, another guy who has connections with the University of Illinois, but from Peoria and has been a very big part of Kansas's recruiting over the past 10 years and now Texas. And that's Jarence Howard, who's the assistant coach and lead recruiter at Texas. One big problem, though, that I saw about him is right now he's making $400,000 as an assistant. So it's like he hasn't been a head coach before. Maybe he doesn't want to risk that right now.
You know, Dan Mueller was making like $450,000 a year as the head coach. So that's a raise. That's a raise.
That is true. But he served 17 years as assistant coach under some of the best minds in college basketball. You got Bill Self, Larry Brown, Southern Methodist, and then Chris Beard at Texas. And he's still just 41 years old, so still relatively young for how long he's been coaching. And those are my probably top three favorite guys right now. And there's going to be a lot more that are recircling.
I mean, I think this could be a coaching job that is looked at as a sleeping giant, because you look at the history of Illinois State basketball, the resources they have, the everything that Illinois State Athletic Department has going for it. You could get some attractive candidates in this, but I think Joey touched on it a little bit, that I think there does have to be that emphasis on recruiting, that you might kind of have to let this current roster bottom out a little bit, let a lot of these, because the way, I mean, now that knowing Mueller was on the hot seat, I think that explains a lot of how this roster was constructed, where he went and got a lot of veteran players that have limited eligibility left that are kind of already developed, already good players. So you could take a, you could work with that crew next year because a lot of these guys will be back. But I think the next coach needs to get his crew crop of recruits in, has to kind of press the reset button on this program in order to bring them back to those heights. And that's where the emphasis on recruiting has to come from.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing that's always driven me crazy about Illinois State basketball since Dan Mueller took over is our lack of ability to recruit in the Chicagoland area because that is such a basketball-rich environment. And it seems like we are completely unable to get anyone from Chicago ever. Like,
since Antonio Reeves,
yeah, with the exception of, like, the best player, with the exception of Antonio Reeves and, like, a couple guys who ride the bench. But the premier athletes from Chicago are never coming
and
here.
That's what's frustrating is seeing Chicagoland players go to schools like SIU or Bradley. Yeah. It's not even saying, like, schools close to Chicago, but seeing them go to other Valley schools that are further from Chicago than we are. That's the frustrating part.
And Jarence Howard has done the same on a different level on the Power 5 because he was at Kansas, so he's taken away guys from Illinois and then Loyola Chicago even recently. But he's been a guy who's been super heavily on just Chicagoland area, the Peoria area, Rockford. He's from Peoria, and I think he's definitely been my favorite choice right now, especially just how much he's been able to do and the recruits he's brought up. And not even talking about the development he's been involved in, especially at Kansas, producing All-Americans, Players of the Year, and even a couple of MVPs, I believe, too, as well.
I mean, maybe I'll play a little bit of devil's advocate here, is depending on what Brian Jones does this last month, his name could be in the conversation,
I was too,
because you think about it, he's been with this program for 3 years. He has familiarity with the players. He was already kind of doing some of that recruiting for them, so if they want to keep the consistency going with this current group of players, that could be somewhere they go.
My only thing is, and this goes back to Kyle Brennan, is Brian Jones, regardless of his coaching pedigree and whether or not he does a good job in the remaining month of the season, he's not a Kyle Brennan guy. And I think that Kyle Brennan will want to bring in someone who is his guy.
Yeah.
You know, and that because this is his first, like, major hire that he's going to have an entire crop of people because, like Joe said, the volleyball coaching pool has kind of been picked over. You have all the opportunity to get whoever you can. And so I think Kyle Brennan will try to shoot big.
Yeah, and there is a guy that's kind of been available right now, DeMarlos Slocum. He was at Utah State as an assistant when Kyle Brennan was there when they went to the NCAA tournament twice, and now he's back at Utah after being the head coach at UNLV, I believe. And so that's a big connection that maybe Kyle Brennan we tapped into, because I remember people just been talking on social media and everything that they've been interested to see maybe what Kyle Brennan will do, try to find connections back, because this is his first time going through this search.
And I think regardless of how this decision pans out, this is going to be the knee-jerk reaction for Illinois State athletics fans. However this hire goes, they're going to judge Brennan off of this. So I think there definitely is a lot of pressure, more so than the volleyball hire, for him to get this one right.
And I wish we would have had him on the show like right now instead of 2 weeks ago, because I would have loved to pick his brain about this.
I mean, that is kind of wild how we have him on the show and then, like, within 5 days after Leah Johnson leaves, then Dan Mueller leaves.
And
like,
all I'm saying is he knew.
He
could have clued us in. Kyle, no disrespect, but maybe next time, like, slip a little note. Just like, slip it to Joe, fold it up, being like, Mueller and Johnson are going.
Well, I mean, I will say something, though. The Leah Johnson, her leaving, that got leaked to us before it happened. We were at TV 10 for Sports Zone. Mm-hmm. We got a tip from inside the athletic department that was going to happen. And then talking to some of the SIDs after, because I had asked them about that, they were all very quizzical, saying, how did you know that? Where did you get that tip from? Yeah. Trying to figure out where the leak was, because they thought they kept it airtight. And then I just thought it was interesting, both things with the Mueller press conferences. Nobody had that before that got out. I think the Johnson was their little test balloon to see where the leak came from, which areas of the athletic department are talking to press, and then nobody knew about Mueller before.
All three of us are journalism students, though, and number one rule is you protect your sources.
Oh, and I did.
They're never squeezing it out of us.
Never give out your sources.
But that I just found it interesting how that they kind of learned from the Johnson hiring or
the
press release.
Resignation.
And then they moved on from
sealed it up.
One thing I do want to say before we take a quick break is that Illinois State and the athletic department will have to pay the $1 million buyout clause. So, I mean, that's a lot of money right there.
Yeah.
And so we'll see how they handle that situation financially.
Happy to contribute my tuition to that.
And that's all we got for this segment. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Juju Redmond of the Redbird women's basketball team is going to join the show. So stick around for that. You're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy. We're now joined by Juju Redmond of the Illinois State basketball game. Juju was just named the Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Week for the third time this season. She had a career-high 37 points against Valparaiso on Saturday. So just to start with that, had you ever dropped that many points in a game at any level, like high school, AAU, grade school, pickup? Was that the most you've ever scored?
Yeah, I believe. I think in high school I got up to 35.
So what was like going on in that? Did you just know you were automatic that day, or how were you feeling during that?
I actually felt normal. When I have days like that, I just literally just go with the flow. I didn't even know I had that many until we was in our last media, and Lexi Bowes was like, "You at 35, keep going." I'm like, "Really? I didn't even."
So talking about points, you recently had your 1,000th point. Was that a big moment for you just in your college career? Or was that more of like a just another day at the office type thing?
I really thought it would have been a bigger moment if I would have scored it at Loyola, because I really wanted to score it at Loyola. But it was just a regular day because I only needed 3 points. So it wasn't that big of a deal for me. But like, it also was a big deal for Kristen, because I was the first person to get 1,000 points since she's been here. So I shared that moment with her, and I also thank her for actually recruiting me to be here.
And you were saying you wanted it to be done at Loyola, and then does that have to do with like coming from Chicago? What was it like playing in the Chicago Public League, one of the toughest in the state?
I mean, it was pretty tough, but like, I was at the best school, so it was just that's automatic there. And it just was coming from COVID and my family not being able to see as many like in-person games for me going to Chicago, because last year we had 2 back-to-back, but no one could come. But it was just fun to play in front of my family again.
So talking about growing up in Chicago, your high school coach, Dorothy Gaithers, has the most wins in IHSA girls history. You come here, play for Coach Gillespie. How have those coaches shaped you into the player and the person you are today?
I mean, G has groomed me into the person I am today. She took me under her wing, even when I didn't even understand the logic of basketball. And as a freshman going into high school, I had no clue, like, the next level of playing Division I basketball. I really didn't, like, care for it. And over those years, I've grown a passion to, like, actually, and I fell in love with basketball. And I just used my platform and things that I've been through to just get me through days. And Coach G also opened my eyes into a different light and a more professional level in bringing the game to my life.
And so moving from high school to your first collegiate basketball experience, how did the JUCO route affect you as a basketball player?
Oh, JUCO was really tough. Like, that brought the toughness out of me. I played for Dorothy, but she was a tough coach, and she knew what she was talking about. But, like, if you was talented, like, it was easy. But, like, JUCO attack you mentally a different way. Like, you have to be mentally prepared to be in that conference and at that level that I was in. The Panhandle is like the best conference in the country, in my opinion, but it just attacked me in a mental level and made me become a stronger person.
And then coming out of JUCO, what was the main reason or a couple of reasons that you wanted to come here to Illinois State?
I mean, I love underdog schools, and I always was an underdog, and I always get looked over, or I'm just a team player, and they took a chance, and it was the best chance they could have took. But, I mean, it was just the best fit for me. I loved the culture that they was trying to build and the family-oriented, and I was closer to home, too.
And so talking about that culture, going from underdogs maybe to the big dogs this year, your team sitting atop the Missouri Valley Conference. When you came here, you were definitely one of the underdog teams. Obviously, 3 years ago, you were just beating Missouri State that year before the COVID shutdown last year. Also had a very good year. How has that team culture just changed in your 3 years here?
I mean, it changed in a dramatic way. And they always saying, like, we need great leadership. Like, we need winners to understand, like, help wheel everyone else along. And we need you to, like, help us build this culture. And I feel like my first year here, it was a really dramatic change for everyone. And I feel like if we would have played out that season, we would have really shocked a lot of people. I felt that was a really good team, but like now, like it's go time. Like we're showing that we're like the best team in our conference.
And so are you guys kind of building upon the heartbreak that has been the last couple seasons? It just feels like a couple years now of unfulfilled promise, but it seems like the team has this new dedication to winning. Has that have the past 2 years impacted how you guys look at this season?
I mean, personally, yeah. But, like, the past 2 years, we had a different roster. So this year we've had, like, 6 newcomers, and last year we had, like, 4 or 3. And, like, we have lost a lot of players, and then we also gained a lot of players. And we just got more players that want to win and would do anything to win. So I feel like that's a great team to have.
And then you guys have 2 games against the number 2 and 3 teams in the MVC this weekend. What have you guys just been keen on throughout practice this week, or leading up to this week?
I mean, being aggressive, and I'm, like, excited for it. I feel like we all are excited for it. And this is what it's going to be for the rest of the year. It's going to be nothing but punches thrown at us, and I feel like we're staying humble and staying to the course, and we're going to make it out.
And this Sunday is Senior Day at Redbird Arena. You were actually honored last year in Senior Day, too, and then elected to come back for your 5th year. So did getting that out of the way last year kind of take off a little bit of that emotional pressure that's probably going to come on Sunday, playing your last game at Redbird Arena?
Yeah. And also, like, I'm not big on emotions and I go with the flow, but, like, it's things that I know that's going to happen. So it's not that much emotion that's given, but, like, it will be a big day for me on Sunday.
And so, not being, like, a super heartfelt, emotional type player, where does that competitive drive come from? Because clearly you have it in droves. So where inside of you do you get that motivation to compete?
I honestly don't know. And, like, I've been through a lot in life, and, like, I just know how to put on a face and, like, go get what I need and what I want.
And you're an all-around type player. You can do everything on the court, play anywhere on the court, it seems like, too. What do you think, though, personally, is your best aspect in your game?
I feel like passing the ball is, like, the best thing I can do.
Mm. Is there any, like, aspect that you want to try to work on or towards the end of the year or anything? Or
do you Probably shooting. Threes, expanding the game.
And then going back to your start of your career with your Redbird, with Illinois State, we mentioned you scored your 1,000th career point. What do you remember about your first points with Illinois State or your first game? How was that experience?
Oh, man. I don't even remember the first game. I just remember the best game in preseason that I played at Illinois State is when I scored 23 against SLU, and then it was like a breaking point for me. It opened up a lot of doors.
So with the end of your Redbird career coming up, have you given any thought to transitioning into professional basketball at all? Or what are your plans looking like after graduation?
That is, like, the key goal was to play professional after this year.
And you guys have a tough end of the schedule, like we were saying, 2 weekend games, and then you go to Drake next weekend, who's in 3rd place. Is there a way that this difficult schedule, like, helps you guys in the advantage leading up to the conference tournament?
I mean, it gives us a lot of urgency, and, like, and it opens our eyes. Like, it's not going to be easy, and we have to put on the best performance for the next 5 games. Well, actually 6, to be where we need to be going into March and going into the NCAA tournament.
And then talking about how tough the Valley is, you've played against some of the top players in the Valley for so many years. Who's someone that, even though they're on a different school, you respect their game just from playing against in all these battles?
I would say UNI's point guard. I respect her game. She's just a really humble point guard, and, like, she's solid. I can just give her that. She's really solid.
And then, kind of in the same vein, who's somebody that you've played with here at ISU who really has taught you a lot about basketball, or is just one of your favorite people that you've ever gotten to play with?
I mean, Mary is just really different, and, like, I play with pretty good shooters, but, like, I never play with, like, a Mary. Like, she can catch the ball at any angle I pass it to and let it fly.
And what would you like to say to the fans going into this weekend to try to come out and support you guys on the court?
Come out and see a game, I guess.
And we'd like to thank Juju for coming on the show, and we encourage fans to come out Friday and Saturday and Sunday for those 2 games. If you can't make it to Redbird Arena, both broadcasts will be on WZND. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Carter Getty's going to join the show to talk some NBA All-Star Game. That's next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Steph Jankowicz from Redbird Volleyball, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy. And now joining the show is Carter Getty from the news and sports team and the sharpshooter of our rec league basketball team. Carter, yes, welcome back to the Red Zone.
Hey, thank you guys very much. I love coming on here and being a guest.
And I feel like you undersold that. Carter's got one of the nicest jump shots I've ever seen.
And before the show, Marcel Francis also gave you a shout out, so everyone's been shouting you out.
No way, Marcel
today.
Had you on.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, that's the boy.
What a nice natural lull. I was just going to say, speaking of shooting,
that's where I was going.
We're talking about the NBA All-Star game. What? Yeah. Crazy.
Absolutely. I'm here to talk about All-Star weekend. There's a lot going on, a bunch of new formats, and shout out to Adam Silver and the NBA for really keeping it relevant, really keeping it fresh, keeping the fans engaged. And we're going to start with the skills challenge. They actually have three different teams, Team Antetokounmpo with Giannis and his siblings. We also have the Team Cavs with the young studs that are really coming up in the Eastern Conference. And then we have Team Rooks with Scotty Barnes, Cade Cunningham, and Josh Giddey. So some guys that are really coming onto the scene in the NBA with their rookie season and making a name for themselves.
So I think just starting with that, I'd say for most All-Star games, I always liked a skills competition more than the actual game. You could say that about the Home Run Derby, the Pro Bowl skills competition is fun when they play dodgeball. NHL, NBA, same thing. But I like the way that the NBA is always a little ahead of the curve with this, that they rework the skills competition every year, that they're adding new things, new formats, new ways of scoring things. I think you said a little bit about Adam Silver that the NBA's All-Star Weekend always seems to have the most creativity. And they always shake it up every few years. That's what makes it the most fun thing to watch.
And even just shaking up the skills competition, because to be honest, the past couple of years, I feel like the skills competition was always like the worst out of the three ones that happened on Saturday night. But doing this with the three teams and everything, I think it's a great idea, especially having the Antetokounmpos. I wanted them to just do like the Antetokounmpos versus the Balls versus like the Jokic's with like Jokic's two older brothers.
Well, yeah, it's almost like a little family feud.
Also, for the Balls, LiAngelo would have to make the league.
That's tough.
But going to the actual contest and everything, I think it's going to be an easy wrap for the Rooks with Giddey and Cunningham and Scotty Barnes. I think they're going to be kind of like wanting to do it more, I guess, or like more locked in because they're rookies.
Don't sleep on Thanasis.
Josh Giddey, though, like what he can do with the ball, man.
And his TikTok presence is A1. he's a great TikTok.
And I don't like picking against Giannis because I love Giannis.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think I'm going to have to go with Team Rooks as well. Josh Giddey, the youngest player to ever record a triple-double, and Cade Cunningham and Scotty Barnes both having a great first year.
Yeah.
Super fun to watch. I do think they're going to come away with the win. But that's going to lead us into the three-point contest, where our very own Chicago Bulls, Zach LaVine, is participating in it. Doctors just cleared him, so hopefully he's good to go for that. He's also going against Fred VanVleet, Luke Kennard, CJ McCollum, Patty Mills, Trae Young, who are all just completely premier three-point shooters. And they also have a big man in there, Karl Anthony Towns, who's been shooting the ball lights out this year. It's going to be really exciting, guys.
And we've talked about it a little bit on this show before when talking about the Bulls, that it felt like Zach LaVine's really had his coming out party probably the last year and a half with the Olympics last summer, then his start to this season. So it was kind of it's good to hear that he's cleared to play in this, because I still feel like his stock is trending up and up. So to get to see him participate in the three-point contest is just even huger for him growing into a league-wide star.
Mm-hmm. And for I think the favorite going into this has to be with Fred VanVleet. He's making the most threes with 10 this year, with 10 attempts per game, and he makes the most too with 4. And he shoots a solid 40% from the line, and he's been a big reason why the Raptors have kind of been a little bit better than what maybe people expected at the beginning of the year. And he's from Rockford, so you got a shout out to Rockford, you know. So I'm going with the local guy in Fred.
Yeah, and then my favorite one of these NBA skills competitions has to be the dunk contest. Oh, yeah. And I think the lineup stacked this year.
And that's one of the events that they really haven't tweaked with. It's always the dunk contest. You have to do it.
But it's gotten the dunk contest.
It's gotten worse because you don't always have the best players in it. It's a lot of underknown players. So I think to revitalize the dunk contest, you have to have the marquee names in it. And so what are we feeling about this year's lineup with it?
I actually really like this lineup. It's a lot of people who have just been putting posters in games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People who are jamming the ball, and they're getting noticed for it. People like Obi Toppin, Jalen Green, Cole Anthony, and Juan Toscano-Anderson. Four guys who are very young in the league, have young careers, making a name for themselves, but they're also just freak athletes. We saw Obi Toppin throw down multiple through-the-legs dunks in a game, like this season. And the rest of the guys have been absolutely posterizing people. Juan Toscano-Anderson actually posterized JaVale McGee so hard earlier this season, he signed an autograph for him and gave it back to him, like a picture of the poster. Like, it was so good. JaVale McGee was like, yeah, I mean, you got me. He's like, I hate you for this, but I will sign it.
And I know Joe's got my back on this one, but I've loved Obi since his days at Dayton.
Yeah, me too.
Like, he has just always been electric. I'm so excited to see what he pulls out, because he's got such a good character, too. Yeah. Like, he's just a charming dude.
I think he's, like, the clear favorite. I mean, he's ranked, has the most dunks of all the guys competing this year, 16th in the NBA in that. But he's only played about 15 minutes, too, throughout the whole entire season. And one of the big things is he participated last year in this event against Anfernee Simmons, where that was kind of a close one. It was a close battle, and I think he's trying to get revenge this year. And he's just so athletic. The stuff that we've seen from college at Dayton, and now even in the NBA, in-game dunks, yeah. Like, that's also a big advantage, too.
And obviously, there's the athleticism, but the factor you have to consider is the props. That you got to think who's going to get the most creative with it, with the music, with the light shows and stuff. I mean, we think about Blake Griffin dunking over a car.
Classic.
It might not always be the
Kia
best
Optima.
Got and then the Superman, over. Nate Robinson jumping over.
Right, that's the stuff Jacket. People remember. Yeah.
Yeah, and so if we're talking about that, Obi Toppin, I do believe, is the dunking favorite. But in terms of flashy plays and like the props that you mentioned, I do believe Jalen Green might be able to squeak this one out.
Okay.
He's a much more flashy of a player, and I think he could walk away with this one.
And I think it's kind of big for him because, I mean, for what he was expected as a number two pick, it's kind of been a disappointing season, maybe. I mean, he is on the Rockets, so maybe
Rockets,
he's looking at this event as like, all right, this is my like coming out party. I'm going to yam on some folks.
Yeah, you got to let people know that just because I'm on the Rockets doesn't mean I'm bad at basketball.
That's exactly true.
Exactly. And then that will lead us to the Rising Star Games, which was once simply a matchup between the league's best rookies and sophomores. And then they changed that to a USA versus world format. But this year, now under a brand new format, they are going to have four separate teams in a tournament style with three games. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a truly who are the best rookies in the league. And so we have Team Barry, Team Isaiah, Team Peyton, and Team Worthy going at it in the Clorox Rising Star Games. What do we think is going to happen,
this
guys?
This is probably my favorite thing that's going to be happening this All-Star Game. It's a new thing, and like we were talking about just before, how this is like a new thing with the Rising Stars, but I think it's interesting combining all these guys from different areas of the league, sophomores, freshmen, and then the people from the G League and Knight team that are going to be not even in the NBA right now. They're going to be drafted coming up, and I think it's going to be the most fun because the young guys, they want to play, and they're going to go out there and put on a show.
I think this is just a great way to get more exposure to some undercovered players, even the G League players. You get to get them in there, grow their brand, get them on the national stage. And talking about All-Star Games, that, you know, when you have the vets that have done this a bunch of times before, they take it a little easy. They just focus on the offense. I think this is where we might see, like, the grittiest basketball, these guys that are playing on the national stage that want to prove themselves out there. So that could be fun. And this is just really cool concept, talking about how the NBA shakes things up when they get stale, going now with the four-team format for the Rising Stars Challenge.
And this is something I kind of wanted the NFL to do with, like, to get rid of the Pro Bowl. Just give me a bunch of guys that are rookies or guys that aren't in the league right now that are fighting for the league and just
like
play them.
Squad guys,
because I'm sure we'll see a good amount of effort put in on, I believe it's Friday night, tomorrow night, for this competition.
And I think it's just going to be so much fun. And like Joe said, this is my favorite thing the NBA is doing. They're so inventive with the different ways to make their All-Star game fun. And I think this is one of the best ideas they've had in years. And the fact that we get to watch Sadiq Bey, Anthony Edwards, and Tyrese Halliburton all on the same team. They're on Team Isaiah Thomas.
Team Gary Payton,
and,
baby.
And you could say whatever you want.
LaMelo, Scotty, Ayo Dosunmu, and you got Duarte. Well, he's not playing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Kuminga, though, come on. They got some length over there.
I see. But it's just so fun.
it's so fun
because you get all these young guys in who are going to play hard. They're going to be really, really good. And I think we're just going to get maybe some of the most interesting basketball that we see all All-Star Weekend.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Leo, who do you have?
I like the Team Gary Payton, just taking a look at having LaMelo Ball, Ayo Dosunmu, who's just been taking over this season, mixed in with Scotty Barnes. I think that's going to be my favorite to watch.
Yeah, I'm going with Team Payton as well. It just seems like the most well-rounded team with LaMelo, Ayo Dosunmu, who's a very good defender but can also produce on offense.
Yeah.
And then all the way down at the bottom, we didn't mention Davion Mitchell, great guard in Sacramento, really going to hold things down out there. So I'm taking Team Peyton with that as well.
The big question, though, is how much longer is he going to be in Sacramento?
Who knows? They're shipping everybody.
Yeah.
to anywhere else but Sacramento. So
it'll be fun to watch Team Rick Barry, too, with Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, two of the top prospects this year. And then those two linking up, like, I couldn't imagine that in a real NBA game.
Right. But that's why this is just so fun.
Yeah.
I love this concept.
Exactly.
So now maybe taking things from the All-Star weekend to the rest of the season, Carter, you also mentioned you wanted to talk some MVP race because there's a Chicago Bull player that's very much in that race. Where do we want to start with the MVP talk?
Absolutely. So I can just mention probably the top 10 or 11 athletes that are within the MVP race right now. In the current rankings, we have number 1, Joel Embiid, number 2, Nikola Jokic, number 3, Giannis Antetokounmpo, number 4, Stephen Curry, 5, Chris Paul, 6, Ja Morant, 7, DeMar DeRozan, 8, Kevin Durant, 9, Luka Doncic, 10, Devin Booker, and in 11th, we have Jimmy Butler. So what are you guys' thoughts on that so far as we reach the halfway mark of the season, and who do you think could emerge as the leader in the second half?
I mean, I'm going to go with the homer pick and just say I want to see DeMar DeRozan win this just because he's been such a thrill to watch that he was rated as the worst signing of the free agency going into the year. And now look at how he's playing. Dropped 40 in back-to-back games. He's just been a thrill this season.
Carter, do you know when those rankings came up? Because I don't know if they've been watching what DeMar DeRozan's been doing.
Right.
50% shooting, breaking Wilt Chamberlain's records. And he's been doing that for like the whole entire year as well. So,
and you also have to take
7th, I think he's easily top 5.
And you have to take into account also like where the teams are at, where the Bulls ranked in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, definitely.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, and so he's been such a big part of that team's success this year that I feel like he has such a good case. But, you know, the NBA is such a star-driven league. There are a lot of guys who could you could feasibly make a case for.
Well, absolutely. There is a lot of guys that – and that's why this list is so extensive. It's because so many guys are performing well for their team that they deserve to be in this conversation.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so hard to actually get – the correct number of votes because it's such a conflicting area that you're trying to get into.
And like looking at it, the top three right now, it seems it's Joel Embiid, Jokic, and Giannis, three big men. Like recently before Giannis and Jokic, like I feel like there's never really like a big man that wins the MVP award. So this year to see all three of those guys do it, it's I think a pretty big deal. And going looking at it, Joel Embiid, just what he's been doing in Philadelphia, It's crazy. He's kind of been a one-man show. I mean, Ben Simmons left him. Now they got Harden, though, still haven't played together. But what Giannis is doing, I think Giannis is becoming, I don't want to say this, but I am. He's becoming like LeBron because people look at him. He wins these MVP awards. Then they're like, well, he could win it. But look at his stats and like, oh, they did improve.
Yeah.
And then they're like, no, we can't give it to LeBron anymore. And the things
like
he's doing
this
year,
greatness is just kind of becoming the norm. That
I'm not comparing him to LeBron, but in a way, I'm comparing him to how the people viewing
he's just
as
consistently dominant. No, it does make sense.
And this year, he's improved on his mid-range game. He's shooting up to 35%. He's even at the three-point line. He's having a great couple of weeks. And I think right now, for me, I'm a big Giannis guy too, but I'm going Giannis.
And that's the whole question: is who's going to be the metaphorical Steve Nash to steal those two MVPs away from Giannis.
And they probably wouldn't go with like Jokic again, but I mean, the Nuggets have been a struggling team this year.
Yeah,
Jokic has just been that guy.
Absolutely, and that's why I'm going to go outside of those first, three or four picks. It's actually the first five. And so my two MVPs are either DeMar DeRozan or Ja Morant.
Oh.
And the reason I believe that is because what they're doing for their respective teams is absolutely insane. They're both in the top three in their divisions because of those single players. Like, regardless of what the other teams are doing, without those two players on their respective teams, they would not even be close to where they are.
Yeah.
And
Ja
Morant, 44 points and 11 assists last night. He's making this look like a regular ordeal. Like, he does this. He's putting up numbers like that on a night-in, night-out basis. So I think Ja has a little edge over DeMar right now because he's been doing it all season as well as more facilitating than DeMar.
Yeah.
But we can't take anything away from DeMar, what he's doing for the Bulls.
But I think
you
have a great point about Ja Morant, the way that he's been able to kind of turn around this franchise in the past 2 years. And when you look at his supporting cast, like at least DeMar has Zach LaVine and Vucevic, and he has all these guys around him who can help him be successful. When you look at Ja Morant, he's got Steven Adams, who's an okay big man. He's got my boy Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr., who's good.
I think is also the biggest All-Star snub
easily.
Of this entire year.
But the Grizzlies are not nearly as well built as the Bulls. So for them to have the success they're having this season, I think it speaks volumes about how good Ja Morant is.
And you're talking about like MVP snubs and players that have helped teams over the past 2 years. One of those guys, Chris Paul, this year he's averaging a career low in points, but he's averaging over leading the NBA in assists in 10.7. And it's kind of just a guy that who came into Phoenix. I mean, last year we saw it, they go to the finals, and this year they've been the one team that's been consistent. Every team right now in the NBA, I feel like, is kind of like we're waiting it off for a couple months, or we're waiting on until our teams are healthy. But the Suns have just been this consistent team that's been the top of the league since the first game of the season. And Chris Paul has a lot to do with that. And it's like a perfect thing, like you said, Joey, like what Steve Nash won the MVP with 15 points, 12 assists.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty much what Chris Paul has right now in his stats.
I mean, obviously, it's impressive for Chris Paul, too, at 36 years old. I mean, a lot of people probably figured when we went to Phoenix, his career was at the tail end. And he's had that rebirth now the past year and a half. And that's just been so fun to watch from him, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then that'll just about do it for this segment here. But we're going to keep things on the basketball court, as when we come back, we're going to play the 3-up, 3-down, so stick around for that. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Going up, coming down.
It's the 3-up, 3-down.
3-up, 3-down.
Only on the pulse of Redbird Nation. 103.3 WZND.
Sounder means it's time to play a 3-up, 3-down, our college basketball weekly pick'em game. Joey Dwyer do the honors of letting our fans know how we play this game and what the standings are looking like, because you are pretty excited about that.
So the way we play this game, Leo, the way we play this game is we pick six college basketball games a week, and we pick three favorites, three underdogs. One can be an over 80% favorite. One of them has to be a Missouri Valley game. We use the ESPN matchup predictor for all our percentages. And here are the current standings. Tied for fourth place, Joe Kennedy and the guest slot, Carter, that's going to be you tonight.
Tough looks.
16-14. They're above 500. Man, not doing terrible. 16-14. Next, a game above them, we have Steve Cease. He's 17-12. He had a game that was COVIDed out, so that will come back later. And then Leo, in a strong second place, 20-10, but then untouchable right now, 23-7. I'm sitting on top, boys, and it feels darn good. I'll tell you what.
I'm just waiting for the downfall of Joey Dwyer here.
Hey, pride comes before the fall.
Okay.
Yeah, we will.
I'll get things started here with my first favorite. This is going to be my over 80 game. They burned me last week, but I'm going with Wagner over Central Connecticut, a 97.5% favorite. I just got to talk about this last game they had. Wagner lost to Merrimack by 15 points in overtime.
So you're trying to
lose by 15 in overtime?
And Leo, they were what, a 95% favorite going into that game?
They're a 97% lock in this game, so I'm going to go with them again because Central Connecticut's like way below 500, so we're going to try it.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to go with my over 80. This one was very hard to pick for me as Gonzaga hosts Santa Clara on Saturday night, so, you know, go Gonzaga, playing the hits. I've never not picked them in this segment.
My over 80 game is on Friday night. Number 17, USC take over Washington in some big Pac-12 action. I think that's my lock.
Love it. Yeah. My lock is the Youngstown State Penguins. They're hosting Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis, and they're a 98.1% favorite. But here's my favorite thing about the Jaguars of Ooey Pooey, is they posted on Twitter about 2 weeks ago that they were holding open tryouts for their team in the middle of the season. They're without a win in the conference this year, and they're the worst. They're the last team in the KenPom rankings. They have just had nothing right go right for them this year, and it's just a hilarious story.
It's brutal.
And I'd love to see them get the win, but not this week. The Penguins are going to take care of business. Steve Cease's first pick, his over 80, Belmont. Hosting Eastern Illinois.
Eastern's another very bad team. Bottom five.
But
in the
Eastern
country.
You got to be careful. Cameron Kelly will tell you otherwise.
No, not against Belmont.
Keeping things rolling, going into my next game. It's my Ivy League game of the week. We got Penn coming into Yale to take on the Bulldogs as a 74.9% favorite. I'm rolling with Yale here. I think they have some tourney hopes here, so we're keeping things going with them.
Tonight at 7 p.m., Texas State hosts Arkansas State, and Arkansas State is at 76.5%. No, excuse me, Texas State is at 76.5% favorite.
The
Bobcats of Texas State look to win their sixth straight home game, and they're also 10-1 in their last 11 games. at home and 8-2 over their last 10 overall.
Hey, and
Arkansas State's been inconsistent, and I think they're not going to get it done tonight. Texas State over Arkansas.
And I'll tell you what, Joe, the Bobcats of Texas State, they don't lose.
They don't.
They don't lose.
You got to trust the process.
Shout out Bobcat them. Radio.
Yeah. Why'd I pick that?
Alrighty. On Saturday, one of my two MVC games that I picked, I'm going to have Bowling Green over Ball State.
All right. Good pick. My next one. You know I love them. You know they're my boys. The Long Beach State Beach. They're heading to UC Northridge. They're 75.1% favorite. The Beach are going to eat. They're eating tonight. And then Steve Cease's pick. He's picking Stanford. They're hosting Utah, 78.3%.
Very cool.
Picking against Brennan's old school.
Right?
All right. For my next game, we're going with Wright State visiting Oakland, which is not located in California, as we found out courtesy of Joey earlier in the year.
Let's all relax.
That's in Ohio. Oakland's a 78.9% favorite, so I'm going to go with them.
It's a good pick.
Thanks, Joe.
I know a guy who plays basketball on that
really?
Squad, so that's a really
no
good
kidding.
Pick, I think. So
all the way out west?
All the way, no, up north in Oakland, Michigan. But we're going to head to the Missouri Valley Conference now, where on Wednesday night, the Bradley Braves are going to travel down to Missouri State. And believe it or not, this Missouri State team is completely different than what it was when they lost to ISU in December. The Bears have won 12 of their last 15. And I think they take care of business at home against Bradley as a 79.5% favorite, which is very high for Bradley
that's
team.
That's a good right one. That's a good one.
But I like it.
Alrighty, for mine, I'm going to have number 11-ranked Texas Tech over number 20-ranked Texas. On Saturday.
Ooh,
I like that one.
That's a good
one. So, but Texas was actually predicted to rank or to win, I believe 80-something%, even though Texas Tech is ranked higher.
Okay. I like it. I like
it. They're gonna be at Texas. Yeah.
My next pick, I'm taking Tarleton. The Tarleton Texans. Ooh. They're heading up to Chicago State, but Chicago State's in shambles. Tarleton's 75.2% favorite. That's an easy pick for me. And then Steve Cease taking Akron over Eastern Michigan, 78.2.
And for my first underdog, we're keeping things in the valley. We got Missouri State visiting Northern Iowa. The Panthers are 49.8% underdog, so I'm going to go with them. They're coming off a big win over the Birds that could propel them to great things.
All right, Max Asmus and last year's Cinderella team of Oral Roberts travel to North Dakota State tonight, boys, as 50.8% favorite. This matchup could very well be the Summit League Championship game coming up in March. And I'm going to be riding with the underdog, though, in the Bison, as they have won 5 in a row and 8 of their last 9, including a win over Oral Roberts. Ooh. So North Dakota State over Oral Roberts.
Awesome. We're going to go to Big Ten action on Saturday. I'm taking the underdog Michigan State Spartans, ranked 19, over the 12th-ranked Illinois Fighting Illini. I really like the Michigan State team this year. They are 9-5 in conference, and we're going to roll with the Spartans.
Guys, I don't like when my picks are other people's picks. I just heard two of them, so I'll key in on my first. Leo, me and Steve both agree with you.
Great minds think alike.
That the Panthers are going to take care of business against Missouri State, and I'll just say right now that we're the top three. So if three people are picking a game, you'd want it to be those three.
There must be a reason for that. For my next underdog, we're going with a game coming up on Friday. We've got Marist visiting Siena. Siena's a 47.5% underdog, so we're going with them because we don't like Marist over here.
No, we don't. And two of the best players in the MVC, not named Antonio Reeves, meet up on primetime TV, boys, on Sunday on ESPNU. A.J. Green in Northern Iowa welcomes in Isaiah Mosley in Missouri State. Northern Iowa comes in as 49.8% underdogs at home, and I think that the Panthers get things going and take the dub.
Gotcha, Joe. I got one more Saturday game. I'm going to take the Kansas State Wildcats, who are 6-7 in conference, over the Oklahoma State Cowboys, who are 5-8 in conference. I didn't really know what I was thinking about this game. Oklahoma State, 71.9% of their matchup predictor says that they're going to win. Kansas State, though, they are a giant killer.
Roll with the Bruce Weber.
Have been notorious for being a giant killer throughout probably the last 20 years, and so I'm going to roll with them.
And Carter, I love that Michigan State pick that you had last round. I'm going with it too. Michigan State hosting U of I. I think the Spartans are taking down the Fighting Illini. And then Leo, I'm turning this one over to you because Steve's next pick, he's encroaching on your territory a little bit. He's got an Ivy League game.
Oh, no.
He's picking Princeton on the road going against the Browns, and I know you've said Princeton are frauds. How do you feel about it?
That's your funeral, Steve. Princeton is bad, especially on the road. I don't know what you're thinking there.
Shut up.
I'll finish things off with my last pick. We got some Maction here. Friday night Maction. That's what I'll be doing tomorrow night. We got Ohio, 45% underdog at Kent State. I'm going with the Bobcats of Ohio here.
And to wrap up my picks, we head to the Big East, where the former MVC school Creighton Blue Jays, host the Marquette Golden Eagles on Sunday. Marquette enters as a 49.5% underdog, and that's rightfully deserved as they lost three of their last five games, but I think they match up well with Creighton, and they're going to rebound and get the win.
Gotcha. And to wrap things up, I'm going to take Illinois State over Bradley Saturday night in another MVC matchup. So, yeah, I think that's my pick.
Steve's last underdog, Montana State. They're heading over to Eastern Washington, 49.6%. And then my last pick, boys.
Oh, no.
You thought one was enough. You thought one was enough, but it's not enough. We're going with the Long Beach State. We're going with the Long Beach State Beach again, baby. They're going to UC Santa Barbara. They're a 26% underdog, but they're going to take care of business against the Gauchos.
I can't stand when Joey gets like that.
Yeah, let's go, Beach.
He's too
come on,
excited.
Baby.
All right. That's all we got for this week's show. We'd like to thank Juju Redmond for coming on, talking some Redbird women's basketball. They got games coming up tomorrow night and Sunday, so check those out. We talked about the Dan Mueller coaching vacancy, and Carter Getty came onto the show to talk some NBA basketball.
We'd like
to thank all of our guests. Yeah, lots of hardwood tonight on the show. And one more last announcement before we get going here. We'd like to wish a happy birthday to WZND's very own Blake Hornstein. Happy birthday to the blizzard out there.
Yeah. Blizzop.
You know, snowing down for Blizzy right now. It's proper for him right there.
And if you missed any part of tonight's show, you can catch it on podcast form on the website. We're going to have plenty more great coverage coming up in the next couple weeks. Some more interviews coming your way as we're getting ready for the basketball postseason tournaments. That's all we got for this week's Red Zone. Thank you very much for listening on 103.3 WZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.